Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart & Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Lewis, Longman & Walker, a law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman & Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
The Florida legislature passes some tough anti-abortion bills and sends them on to the governor for signing.
Would I like a bill that outlaws abortion? Sure, but that's not what this bill does, because that's unconstitutional, because we're allowed to have a woman's right to choose.
Also tonight, lawmakers are proposing a series of consumer protections for citizens' insurance customers.
Customers are scared of the process, confused, skeptical. That does not help the governor's goal.
We'll also get an update on a change in benefits and even pay for some of the state's public employees and discover what popular Florida grocery chain wanted to end a local styrofoam ban. I'm Tom Flanagan, and with just 2 days remaining in the 2016 Florida legislative session, this is Capitol Report. Florida lawmakers have approved an expansive bill that could further restrict abortions in the state. The measure is an outgrowth of a larger battle over abortion that flared up this past summer after several heavily altered and now discredited videos claimed to show Planned Parenthood officials discussing the sale of fetal remains. We get that story from Lynn Hatter.
Last fall, the Agency for Healthcare Administration accused several clinics of performing what it called illegal second trimester abortions. But there was a problem. The state's rules contained two different definitions of second trimester. Now, Republican Senator Kelly Stargell and Representative Colleen Burton have brought a bill that, among other things, revamps the definition of a trimester. And the change means those clinics initially cited by the state would have to change their practices. Democratic Senator Darren Soto calls the bill an attempt to disguise the state's mistake.
We see an attempt to try to realign the trimesters so that it fits into that big mistake that was made for the whole public to see in trying to shut down clinics that were actually abiding by the law as it is. So we're now shifting the lines to meet what was attempted to be done erroneously.
The measure also restricts state funding from going to organizations that provide elective abortions. Planned Parenthood is the largest of those providers. But Stargell is defending her bill. For her, the issue was personal. Stargell says she was 17 and facing a choice.
And I was told that I wouldn't be successful if I had my baby, that I wouldn't be able to go on and do things if I had my baby. So it is very personal for me, and it is a passion for me.
And she says the proposal aligns abortion clinic standards with those for other outpatient surgical centers.
What this bill does do is say that we're going to treat our abortion clinics the same way that we treat other similarly situated clinics. We treat abortion clinics different than we treat clinics that do liposuction. We treat abortion clinics different than clinics that do colonoscopies.
Republican Senator Alan Hayes of Umatilla calls the bill a protection for people who cannot speak for themselves.
If your heart has stopped beating, you're dead. It's called flatlining. You're dead. I would suggest to you that the research has shown the heart of that little infant begins beating around the 18th or 20th day after fertilization occurs. So at any time after that heartbeat begins, if you terminate that heartbeat, that baby is dead. You have killed a living soul.
Still, as Republican Senator Nancy Dietert notes, Florida has worked for more than a dozen years at something she says is an effort to whittle away at Roe versus Wade.
The whole issue kind of reminds me of the anti-smoking campaign. Just because you took everybody's ashtrays away doesn't mean they quit smoking. And that's kind of what we're doing here. Just because we shut down abortion clinics or make it very difficult for them to operate or expensive doesn't mean that those people who want an abortion aren't going to try to go get one.
Dietert was the only Republican to join Democrats in opposing the bill. In addition to redefining the length of trimesters, the plan also requires physicians who perform abortions to have admitting privileges at nearby hospitals. In Texas, a similar law caused nearly half of that state's abortion clinics to close. The U.S. Supreme Court recently heard arguments on the case, and there's also a court challenge over a similar bill passed in Louisiana. The Senate voted 25-15 to approve the bill, and after a fast vote again by the Florida House, the measure is now going to Governor Rick Scott. The governor has not indicated whether he'll sign the bill. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Florida lawmakers are trying again to reform citizens' property insurance after Governor Rick Scott vetoed last year's proposal. Nick Evans reports the changes would put new restrictions on private companies taking policies out of the state's insurer of last resort.
Florida state-backed property insurance company, Citizens, has been around since 2002, but it was a rash of hurricanes in 2004 that really forced the organization to step into the breach, as major insurers abandoned Florida policies as too risky.
Last year, this legislature unanimously passed a bill with regard specifically to the issue of citizens' property insurance.
This is Miami Republican Senator Anna Terry Flores.
The governor vetoed that bill, and so this year we've come back to what will hopefully be a redo and have a better outcome, although that bill did pass unanimously in both the House and the Senate.
The key issue Flores and others are looking at is known as depopulation. It's the process by which citizens' policies are shifted into the private market. By law, Citizens has to take steps to facilitate getting policies off its books, and it's been a priority for Governor Rick Scott. But Flores is critical of how the takeout process works.
One of the issues that we've had is that it's happened with my constituents, perhaps it's happened with several of yours, that they are getting offers to be taken out of Citizens on almost a monthly, sometimes on a biweekly basis. And you're automatically taken out if you don't sign a piece of paper saying that you want to stay in.
A lot of people didn't get it, right, because of the format of the letter.
Representative Jose Javier Rodriguez, a Miami Democrat, is sponsoring the measure in the House.
You might not even open it because it's, you know, looks like junk mail. If it comes from Citizens, who is your insurer, obviously you're going to read it, you're going to understand it. And if it's confusing, you're going to call your insurance agent.
This year's legislation attempts to address that problem by requiring all takeout offers come from Citizens.
What this amendment will do will ensure that that happen only on a series of cycles so that our constituents don't have to be continuously harassed and being asked or questioned as to whether or not they want to leave Citizens.
Last year, lawmakers tried to cap the number of takeout offers in a given year. And when Scott vetoed the measure, he cited that provision. So lawmakers have dropped the limit this year. But Rodriguez says the measure does take steps to reduce direct solicitation.
What happens is companies will go and try to get information from about customers, pretending like they're going to do a takeout. But in reality, they just use that information to directly solicit customers. So myself, my neighbors, many of us have just been getting bombarded since some of these takeout programs started by solicitations, and this would stop that.
Lawmakers also tried bringing back language allowing policyholders to return to Citizens if rate increases pass a 10% ceiling. But Wednesday, the House amended that provision out of the bill. The measure is now bouncing back and forth between the chambers. Lawmakers will have to reach an agreement before the bill can proceed to the governor. And while Rodriguez admits Scott may not like everything in the bill, he says the measure will actually help depopulation.
You know, if the governor's intent on shrinking Citizens with its takeout process, we have to make sure that there's confidence in that process. And when customers are scared of the process, confused, skeptical, that does not help the governor's goal.
However lawmakers choose to proceed, time is running out on this year's session. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
Well, citrus growers received some good news about the outlook for this year's crop, but the long-term prognosis remains dire for the industry, which is threatened by greening disease. The U.S. Department of Agriculture's monthly forecast, released today, predicted that this year's Florida orange harvest would be enough to fill an estimated 71 million boxes. That's an increase of 2 million boxes from February. But even with the revised forecast, the season remains on pace to be the worst for the citrus industry in five decades. Meanwhile, the forecast for grapefruit production also rose a touch, with estimates set at enough fruit to fill 10.7 million boxes. In February, the outlook was 10.5. A box of fruit, by the way, used in the estimates weighs 90 pounds. Still to come on Capitol Report, after much debate, the House and Senate have come to an agreement to send a measure to the governor financially helping the families of first responders killed in the line of duty.
This is not a political bill. This is a bill about people. We need to put people above politics.
A measure aimed at boosting pay for state election officials was met with philosophical opposition by some lawmakers today.
Members, this is nothing more than politicians feeding politicians by giving pay raises to other elected officials.
Some heavy lobbying by a prominent grocery chain convinces lawmakers to suspend local styrofoam bans in Florida.
This is something that Publix wanted, and they came into town and told people what they wanted, and they got it immediately.
And a bill that would change Florida's 2018 session start date to January is heading to the governor, but some call it a political ploy.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by The Able Trust, 25 years of connecting businesses with workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to interview and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. Abletrust.org.
A bill allowing the surviving spouses of first responders to receive proper death benefits is now headed to Governor Rick Scott. As Sasha Cordner reports, this could mark the end of a contentious debate over pension reform.
Whether you're talking about the death benefits bill or the controversial House pension reform package, both deal with making changes to the retirement options for state workers within Florida's retirement system. The more popular option is the traditional pension plan, and the other is the 401k-style investment plan. Today, those killed in the line of duty and are in the investment plan don't receive much of a death benefit as opposed to those in the pension plan. That's what Bridget Pine, widow of Orange County Deputy Scott Pine, says she found out when he was killed in the line of duty in 2014. And Margate Democratic Senator Jeremy Ring tried to do something about it. His bill failed to pass last year amid a budget impasse between the House and Senate, so he tried again this year. But the House this year included the death benefits provision in its pension reform bill. Still, that didn't deter the Senate, which unanimously passed Ring's standalone bill. But before receiving Senate approval, Ring wasn't sure the House would take up his bill, and he asked the Senate to help him send a message.
I hope we can make a very strong showing on this bill as it goes over to our friends on the other side. So I'm going to ask, Mr. President, if others can co-sponsor this bill only for the purpose of not just supporting the Pine family and others, first responders, but to send a message to the House that we don't want to negotiate when it comes to death benefits of those first responders that have been killed in the line of duty.
But Tuesday, the House took the first steps in discussing the Senate standalone bill dealing with death benefits, and Orlando Republican Representative Renee Plasencia says he's just glad for the Pine family who'd called him with the good news.
Members, when I got the phone call, I think it was Tuesday morning from Bridget Pine, I didn't know what the call was about. We had thought this bill was dead. It was stuck up in the Senate, and we weren't sure what was going to happen. With knowing the history of pension bills, honestly, we thought this bill was dead. But it was truly an act of God and a blessing that we have a speaker in our House who would not let this issue die.
North Fort Myers Republican Representative Matt Caldwell, who authored the House's pension reform package, says the Senate bill applies retroactively to 2002 when the investment plan began.
It increases the monthly survivor benefit for the spouse and children of pension plan members in the special risk class who are killed in line of duty from 50 to 100% of the member's monthly salary at the time of death. Number two, it provides the spouse or children of investment plan members in the special risk class who are killed in the line of duty the same survivor benefits provided to the special risk class members of the pension plan in the first option, including the new increased benefit.
It also provides survivor benefits for a child until the age of 25 instead of 18 if the child is unmarried and a full-time student. And after a question from Melbourne Beach Republican Representative John Tobia, Caldwell confirmed he liked the House's version better.
So in an abundance of clarity, the Senate version provides less benefits to state workers who tragically lose a spouse than the House version. Is that correct?
I believe our bill provided a greater benefit to our state employees, correct?
Still, many Republicans and Democrats praised the measure, like Daytona Beach Democratic Representative Dwayne Taylor, a former firefighter and paramedic.
This is the most important pension bill that we have passed in several years. For those police officers and firefighters which, for whatever reason, want to select the investment plan, they now get death benefits. The families do not have to figure out how they're going to live without their mother or their father, because it is important they are risking their lives each and every day.
Gulf Breeze Republican Representative Doug Broxson says, as the son of a former sheriff, he understands the significance of this bill.
He was killed in 1958 when he was sheriff of Santa Rosa County. I was 9 years old. I remember for the next 10 years how my family lived in poverty because there were no provisions for sheriffs during that time. And I'm so proud today that we're standing for all those folks, both living and dead, that now can say Florida is doing the right thing. We're protecting those families and telling them how much we appreciate the work they did.
And the measure passed the House Wednesday 116-1 with Tobiah as the lone dissenting vote. The bill now heads to the governor's desk. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
While state workers are passed over for the eighth year in a row, Florida's election supervisors could be getting a raise. Kate Payne reports a bill that would do just that is ready for the governor's signature.
The state's average supervisor of elections rakes in about $100,000 a year, depending on the size of the county they serve. While $100,000 is no chump change, supervisors do make less than their fellow constitutional officers like tax collectors and property appraisers. Representative Frank Artiles of Miami says there's a reason for that pay disparity.
In 1960, the Florida legislature took on the responsibility to pay constitutional officers to provide a uniform salary system. In the 1960s, most county officials were men, but most supervisors of elections were women, and their primary duty was to tally paper election ballots once every 2 years, so their salaries were considerably lower than other male county officers. Today, supervisors are responsible for administering all federal, state, county, municipal, and special elections in counties.
While the work of the original supervisors was mostly clerical, modern responsibilities are staggering. Some supporters, like St. Pete Representative Dwight Dudley, say the pay should match the job.
This comes under the heading of, it's never the wrong time to do the right thing. We should be fair and catch them up in the pay that they historically have been denied.
But opponents like Representative Matt Gaetz of Shalimar cast the measure as the worst kind of political back-scratching.
Members, this is nothing more than politicians feeding politicians by giving pay raises to other elected officials. And frankly, if we're going to do pay raises, I say we do them across the board for all state workers and not pick out a select group of people.
Predictably, that across-the-board pay bump did not happen. Still, Representative Blaise Ingolia of Spring Hill says supervisors make enough already.
My county, Hernando County, this will constitute a raise of almost $20,000. The average person in my county makes almost $30,000. So just this raise alone will mean that this raise will be almost two-thirds of what the average person in my county makes.
Nonetheless, most members, like Representative Dennis Baxley of Ocala, rallied around the measure.
It's wrong. This is a huge piece of responsibility. It should be recognized. They're working very hard right now to implement our late-developing maps. And I think it's a time to recognize they're in this tier of operation and they should be treated just the same as the other officers at this level.
While lawmakers ultimately passed the pay equity measure, the bill does little for Florida's overall wage gap. In the Sunshine State, women on average make 85 cents on the dollar compared to their male counterparts. African American women take home 61 cents and Hispanic women a mere 59. The measure just barely slipped through the House with a 58-54 vote. The bill now heads to the governor's desk. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
Everything from black coffee to Kung Pao chicken comes in a polystyrene, also known as styrofoam, container these days. And that's led a handful of Florida cities to ban polystyrene. But as Jim Ash reports, the House gave final approval today to a measure that would stop the local ban the foam movement in its tracks.
Earlier this session, the so-called preemption language was quietly tucked into a food safety bill for the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services. When it reached the Senate floor Wednesday, Democrat Bill Momford of Tallahassee was so eager to pass the bill, he failed to mention the most controversial part.
There are several pieces of it. One of the most important is that it designates the Tupelo honey as a state honey, and I encourage your support.
The bill basically prevents local governments from banning styrofoam until the state conducts a study. Environmentalists fought to kill the preemption language, but the business lobby, including retail food giant Publix, considered it a must-pass. Democratic Representative David Richardson of Miami Beach says the provision appeared as an amendment the night before a committee vote.
Sadly, this is the way things sometimes happen here in the Capitol, especially when it's a controversial issue. So this is something that Publix wanted, and they came into town and told people what they wanted, and they got it immediately.
Richardson thinks single-use plastic bags should be banned too, but his bills haven't gotten any traction. The legislature protected single-use bags from local bans in 2008. The polystyrene bill applies only to local bans enacted after January 1st. Richardson's hometown, Miami Beach, banned polystyrene 2 years ago, and six smaller coastal cities have some type of regulation. Most would be safe. But the bill would kill a polystyrene ban Coral Gables just enacted, says Sierra Club lobbyist David Cullen.
The only reason they're preempting regulation to themselves is to prevent anybody else from doing anything about the problem. And that is only good for the folks that manufacture styrofoam and the folks that use it.
Cullen says styrofoam blows into waterways and clogs intake pipes, increasing local maintenance costs. And he says turtles and other sea creatures eat it by mistake and get sick. Environmentalists are calling for a ban the foam ordinance in Orlando, and that may be what's getting industry's attention. James Miller, a spokesman for the Florida Retail Federation, says a patchwork of styrofoam ordinances would be too confusing, and he says retailers would just have to substitute with something else.
Polystyrene in general makes up about less than 1.5% of all litter, according to a 2012 study. In fact, they create less waste than the paper sleeves that you would get around a coffee drink.
Miller says retailers would ultimately have to pay more for a replacement, and those costs would be passed along to consumers. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jim Ash.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, even though we're almost but not quite ready to bid the 2016 Florida lawmaking session a tearful goodbye, some lawmakers are already looking ahead to the 2018 lawmaking session. This is the end of the Florida legislative session, of course, but most years, the state's lawmakers would be just beginning their 60 days of meetings. The legislature used an early calendar this year, and Regan McCarthy reports some lawmakers are hoping to do the exact same thing in 2018.
Most years, Florida's legislative session starts in March. This year, lawmakers started in January. Some say the change was an effort to get budget information to state agencies earlier. And Winter Haven Republican Representative John Wood says the change had to do with the slog of redistricting special sessions lawmakers faced after the end of the last regular session.
Having gone through this experience and comparing it to the other sessions when we started on time, I really feel that the holidays are the factor. Because we are all about family, as we should be.
Wood says he prefers a March start because he says he'd rather focus on his family during the winter holidays and his legislative work in the spring. But Fort Myers Republican Representative Heather Fitzenhagen counters that.
I just wanted to say that I do agree with Representative Wood that it's very important for families to have that family time. But I am very pleased that this is one of the first time in 4 years that I'm going to be able to spend a fantastic spring break with my kids.
Meanwhile, Miami Republican Representative Anna Terry Flores, who filed a similar bill several years ago, points out other positives, she says, come with a January start date.
We see, and we're living through this now, that we are actually getting through 9 weeks of actual real session work. When we meet in the spring, generally speaking, there's a week that we essentially take time off because of religious holidays like Passover and Easter.
But on the other side of the argument, Lake Worth Democratic Senator Jeff Clemens says he thinks more work gets done with a March start.
With us starting committee hearings early in September, I've just gotten the feeling that maybe, especially in those September and October committee weeks where not a whole lot happened, that because of those what I consider to be lost time, we maybe haven't vetted some of the things that we could have done a little bit better job vetting if we'd had a different legislative session.
Lawmakers like Tallahassee Democratic Representative Alan Williams point out a session change impacts more than just those who work for the legislature.
It's like someone passing a bill to start the orange season early, picking oranges early or picking strawberries or starting a fishing season early. It has an impact on the economy.
And Coconut Creek Democratic Representative Kristen Jacobs says she's worried about the weather.
Coming from South Florida, January and February, December are our most beautiful months. It's when the tourists come to visit South Florida. So what am I going to do? The time of the year where we open our windows and we can finally enjoy the outdoors, I'm going to come up here and close windows and wear a coat because it's too cold.
But Miami Democratic Representative Jose Javier Rodriguez says lawmakers aren't mentioning the real reason for the session change.
When we switch it up, I think the public's perception is that we do that because the legislators want to go out and campaign. And I think that's totally inappropriate. If this bill were to change it permanently to January, I think that'd be fine. I think that would send the right message. But only changing this for even years when legislators want to go out and campaign, I think that sends the wrong message.
But Republican Representative Jeanette Nunez, who carried the bill in the House, maintains the changes to benefit state agencies that must prepare for a new budget year in July. And she says changing the date of the session on odd years would require a constitutional amendment. The measure is awaiting final approval from the governor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Ronald J. Eben, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at @FPRCapReport. And join us again each weeknight during the 2016 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart & Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Lewis, Longman & Walker, a law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis Longman & Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.